Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Monday, January 31st. I'm your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. We'll have our minds in the mountains on today's program. First, we'll hear from a Jackson Hole-based illustrator and cartoonist in advance of the release of his graphic novel, The Ski Town Fairy Tale. Then, we'll hear about a union organizing with workers in the hospitality industry targeting real estate investment trusts operating big hotels. And CityCast Denver looks at the context behind expressions of customer dissatisfaction with Vail Resorts. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the BBC headlines and then the Hightower Lowdown, followed by the latest episode of Unaffordable, a collaboration between the Boulder Weekly and KGNU. And, as always, on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is still ahead this morning, but first, a look at local and regional headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
The city of Boulder will pay $95,000 to settle a case against a former police officer who was accused of unlawfully arresting a man in 2019. The case involved Sammy Lawrence, who was observing an interaction between homeless people and police, including Officer Waylon Lolotai. Nine News reports that Lolotai asked Lawrence to move away several times and to put down a stick he was holding. Lawrence uses the stick as a walking aid because of a seizure disorder. Officer Lolotai arrested Lawrence, who also alleged that the officer used unreasonable force. However, an independent investigation concluded that the officer did have probable cause to arrest Lawrence and did not use unreasonable force. The city is admitting no wrongdoing and agreeing to pay Lawrence to settle the case. Lolotai voluntarily left the police department in 2020 after a different investigation into social media posts. Denver officials say that they are likely to let the city's indoor mask rule expire this week. Currently, everyone who is older than 2 must wear a mask in all indoor spaces, but that mandate is set to expire Thursday. Authorities told 9 News that they are encouraged by the continuing decline in case rates and hospitalizations across the metro area. They added that they were going to discuss the issue this past weekend with Metro partners. The Tri-County Health Department, which covers Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas counties, said that they would be discussing ending the mask mandate today. State epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Herlihy said last Thursday that while there is movement in the right direction, there's still a lot of COVID-19 moving through communities. The King Soopers grocery store on Table Mesa Drive in Boulder, which was the site of a mass shooting in March, will reopen on February 9th. In a news release, the president of the supermarket said that restoring the location is a very important step in a healing journey and signifies a tremendous milestone for all of them. The Daily Camera reports that the store has previously said that about half its employees who worked there at the time of the shooting intend to return. The reopening had been delayed by a workers' strike that was recently settled. The Colorado Secretary of State is demanding more information from the Elbert County Clerk about its computer hard drive. On Friday, Secretary of State Jenna Griswold's office said that copies of the county's election system hard drive are possessed by unauthorized people. The Colorado Sun reports that the allegations came to light during an investigation into the county clerk, Dallas Schroeder, a Republican. Elbert County is southeast of the Denver metro area. According to Griswold's office, it's likely that copies of the hard drive were made using a prohibited removable storage device. A week ago, Griswold, a Democrat, ordered Schroeder to provide preliminary information. Schroeder admitted that 2 people who are not employed by the clerk's office gave instructions to him as he made the images of the hard drive. The investigation into the Elbert County clerk comes as Griswold is also investigating Tina Peters, the clerk in Mesa County, who is accused of copying an election hard drive and also other misconduct. An Aurora City Council member could be censured for making statements about police personnel matters during a talk radio interview. Danielle Jurinski allegedly said that the deputy police chief and the chief should step down. While being interviewed on KNUS, Jurinski said that the police shortage problem in the city could be fixed by removing the chief immediately and take out with her the, quote, trash of the deputy chief of police, Darren Parker, unquote. The Aurora Sentinel reports that another council member, Juan Marcano, said that by publicly telling the two to resign, Jurinski violated a section of the city's charter that prohibits council members from interfering in employment matters that are under the authority of the city manager. Marcano has started a process against Jurinski that will result in a public hearing. Jurinski claimed that her statement did not violate the city's charter and that she did not call on the city manager to dismiss the chief and her deputy. Tomorrow, parking fines in Denver are going up because the current level is not enough to encourage people to park illegally. To park legally, of course. Drivers who make the city less accessible for others like pedestrians, cyclists, and those in wheelchairs will have to pay more. Denver Wright reports that now, if a parker blocks a sidewalk, they're fined $25, but starting Tuesday, it will be $65. And someone who illegally parks in a space for disability access will now have to pay $350, a $200 increase. Today's last day of January, and the month has been very snowy, with more than 13 inches recorded in Denver. The month is usually one of the least snowy of the season. In the past, only about 6.5 inches have fallen. The National Weather Service is saying that today will be sunny, with highs in the mid to upper 50s, and windy with gusts up to 47 miles per hour, and tonight a low of 21. Tomorrow, snow is possible, mainly after 11 a.m. and into Tuesday night, with accumulation of 3 to 5 inches possible, and a low of only about 13. Right now, it's about 34 in Boulder and colder in Denver and Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Lift Lines Comics is a popular commentary on mountain town life, focused on Jackson, Wyoming, but the jokes apply to many other resort towns. Now, the artist behind the comic is publishing a graphic novel called The Ski Town Fairy Tale. Jack Catlin of KHOL Jackson interviewed Ryan Stolpe about the struggle of living the dream.
Ryan Stolpe is a cartoonist, illustrator, and marketing professional based here in Jackson. Stolpe is the co-founder of Origin Media, a full-service digital and marketing agency, as well as the creator of the popular Lift Lines Comics, a 3 times per week comic in the JH News and Guide and published on Instagram. Your graphic novel, who you co-authored with Sam Morse, is called The Ski Town Fairy Tale, and it's about chasing the dream in a ski town. What made you decide to make a long-form graphic novel, and how did the concept come to be?
So Sam Morse used to live in Jackson, and he wrote The Bumyan, which was a TGR kind of like graphic satirical post. And he moved to Salt Lake City a couple years ago and ended up reaching out to me because he knew Lift Lines. And he had been mulling over this idea of a ski town fairy tale. And he really wanted to tell a kind of deeper story about ski towns. I think it gets idolized and kind of put on a pedestal in a lot of ways. And he was someone that, you know, really dealt with all sides of the complexities of, you know, making it work here. He reached out to me and we started riffing on the idea and ended up putting together this deeper story. And I told him, like, hey, I want to draw it in this style. I know that you know Lift Lines, but I wanted a kind of new challenge. Lift Lines is a quick get the concept out there. And this graphic novel is a much more intentional, polished kind of format.
What exactly is that dream, and how has the vision of that dream shifted in recent years?
We kind of like start the story off with FOMO. It's kind of a digital addiction. You know, everyone is curating their online worlds and their social media accounts. And I think that it's easy to think that what you're seeing on people's feeds is them living the dream. But there's certainly some self-editing that's going on. So what is the dream? I think they're kind of moralistic aspirations, you know, being true to yourself, adventuring, having fun. I'm living in the moment. But I think that it's getting more complicated in a world of work. You know, you're always plugged in. It's harder to kind of be simple and be present, I would say. And then you have a lot of economic factors. So as outdoor recreation has exploded. There is a demand and a competition to live in these places. Mm-hmm. And there are regulations. You can't camp in your van like you used to in the 70s, wherever you want. So it's getting harder and harder and harder. Look at the rising price of lift tickets or the equipment to do things. So we discussed a lot about what it means to live the dream in developing this story. And hopefully it starts a conversation, because I think the dream is a bit of a mindset. It's kind of how you approach life. I think it needs to evolve beyond a place or a time or an activity, because those things are really up for discussion right now as far as their viability.
So the ski town, and specifically here in Jackson Hole, can feel like a bubble, a self-contained and at sometimes crazy universe. What is it about the culture of ski towns that you think creates this kind of atmosphere?
I've noticed living here, you're kind of always like one foot in a vacation, because the people around you are all on vacation and they're here to spend money, go out every night. And when you are a resident here, you're constantly buffeted by those winds. And then when you have people saying, oh, look where I live, it's so beautiful, I got stuck in a bison jam this morning. I think Instagram is really elevated these places as a status symbol and created more competition with the limited space, housing, jobs, opportunities in these communities. That's really turned out the heat on what it means to try and make it here. It requires a certain amount of extra effort to live here. And I think when everyone can share in that kind of like, yeah, I'm really trying to make it work, I'm putting my values first and saying I'm willing to hold two jobs to be able to sharing this lifestyle, is really powerful and super cool. And I think something that's missing in a lot of people's, you know, intentional day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. I think that's the silver lining, the beauty of a ski town. It does spit people out though. And whether you like burn hot and fast and get ejected, or you're hanging on for dear life, there's some weird dynamics that kind of compound and happen quicker in a time frame than maybe your arc had you lived in a different
life. Yeah, and sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's not, you know.
Totally. But it mirrors that like live in the moment thing. You don't know how long it's going to last. You know you're a local when every day you wake up and you're like, is this where I need to be in a year? Can it work? Like, am I going to regret being in this like a no man's land? Mm-hmm.
You can find Liftlines Comics 3 times per week in the JH News and Guide and on Instagram at Liftlines_comics. I'm Jack Catlin, and this is KHOL Jackson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Union organizers are riding a wave of momentum into 2022 and hoping to expand collective bargaining victories into the hospitality sector. Unite Here locals across the country held a national day of action last week to focus public attention on what they call shadow bosses of the hotel industry, real estate investment trusts. According to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, real estate investment trusts, also known as REITs for short, buy and develop properties primarily to operate them as part of investment portfolio. Union organizers say these REITs tend to increase their profit margins by squeezing workers and exploiting tax loopholes. KGNU's Dave Ashton caught up with one of these organizers.
I'm Kevin Abels. I'm the Denver chapter president for Unite Here Local 23.
Kevin, why are you and other members of the local out here protesting in front of the IRS building downtown Denver?
We're protesting the tax loophole that allows real estate investment trusts to own hotels and reap profits without paying taxes. And meanwhile, they are reducing jobs in the hospitality industry. So lots of housekeepers and food and beverage workers at hotels that are owned by these REITs are out of work, even though there is work available. And we want these folks to be better corporate citizens, put people back to work, and pay their taxes just like everyone else.
What is it that makes these REITs or these real estate investment trusts shadow bosses and not just bad bosses?
Right. We call them shadow bosses because they are able to avoid the responsibilities of the employer while actually making the decisions behind managing the property, right? So they have other corporate partners like Hilton or Marriott that they hire to manage the property and technically be the employer. But meanwhile, the REIT is behind the scenes making all of the decisions, saying eliminate daily housekeeping, don't open up the restaurant for dinner, keep all these people laid off. So that's why the REIT is a shadow boss.
Eliminate daily housekeeping. That sounds like a real departure from what people are accustomed to and in hotels.
Yeah, it's a departure for the customers, and it's also a departure for housekeepers. Most people who are paying $200-$300 a night expect their room to have a nice refresh every night. That's part of the level of service that these hotels provide. But the REITs are taking advantage of COVID and using that as an excuse to cut these services. And the guests suffer and housekeepers suffer in the process too.
When you're talking about housekeepers, who is that?
Yeah, the housekeepers in Metro Denver are a majority female immigrant workforce. And so they come from dozens of countries all over the world. They're often paid minimum wage, and it is terribly backbreaking work, right? Housekeepers have to clean 15, 20, sometimes 25 rooms a day. And if those are all rooms that are turning over for a new guest, and each of them has two beds in it, you can strip and remake up to 60 beds a day. So it's brutal work. Housekeepers always have aches and pains in their arms, in their back, in their shoulders, in their neck, because of just how physically demanding the job is. But the REITs don't care about that. They're just trying to milk every single cent off these housekeepers' labor.
In raising awareness about this, what can the general public do to make an impact on this rather complicated structure?
Exactly. So we are asking everyone who cares about this issue to contact their members of Congress about closing this tax hole behind the REITs.
That was KGN News' Dave Ashton speaking with Kevin Abels of Unite Here's Local 23. You are listening to KGN News' Morning Magazine. Broomfield-based Vail Resorts is the biggest ski resort operator in North America. It generates hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue and operates some of the most popular resorts, including Breckenridge, Keystone, and of course, Vail. But Vail Resorts is in some hot water right now with skiers and snowboarders who bought Vail's Epic Pass. These clients argue they are not getting their money's worth on the slopes, and not enough of the company's profits goes towards paying workers a living wage. CityCast Denver host Bree Davies called up Jason Blevins in Eagle, Colorado. When he's not hitting the slopes at Beaver Creek, he's reporting on all things outdoors for the Colorado Sun.
Jason Blevins, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thanks for having me, Bree.
So there's this petition going around from skiers and snowboarders on change.org called Hold Vail Resorts Accountable. And maybe we can start by unpacking a quote from this petition, because I think it touches on a lot of the core issues that are at play here. It says, quote, "The Vail Resorts approach is a disaster, and it's tearing communities apart, and it's ruining mountain culture." What is the Vail Resorts approach that they're referring to?
So the opponents of Vail Resorts love this. So for years, they've kind of, the nickname for Vail Resorts is the evil empire, right? And they are a lot like the Borg, if you listen to, you know, they assimilate. They buy a resort.
Oh, like Star Trek, the Borg.
Yeah, yeah. They've consolidated operations into a headquarters. There's maybe an imbalance there in considering the value of a culture in a mountain town and thrilling Wall Street investors, which Vail Resorts very good at one and is maybe working on the other, right?
And where did this petition come from? Like, what specifically do the skiers and snowboarders want to see change?
So this guy, Jeremy, he's an old Crested Butte skier, really nice guy. He grew frustrated with Vail Resort's inability to open terrain up at Stevens Pass, which is outside of Seattle in Washington. And he thought he'd put a fun petition on change.org. And it's called Hold Vail Resorts Accountable. And within a few days, he had 10,000. Within a few weeks, he's got 40,000. 50,000 people have signed this thing. And it's basically saying, you know, if you're going to sell us a pass early, you really should open terrain. And, you know, the resort has struggled to open terrain, largely based on a labor crisis that is a national issue that is troubling the entire hospitality industry, right? It is particularly acute in these ski towns. Like, you might not ski much, Bree, but you do probably get up to the mountains every once in a while. And you know these towns are really expensive, right?
Yes, it's
unbelievable how much it costs to live up here, how much it costs to own a house up here, how much it costs to rent a house up here. So, they're struggling. And then add in the wave of this new variant with the coronavirus. You know, I've heard that they have as many as 10 to 15% of their workers have been unable to come into work because they tested positive. And they're really struggling to put bodies, in the resorts to work. And they're struggling to get resorts open, open chairlifts, spin chairs and open new terrain. So it's been a bit of a challenge. And this is industry-wide. But since Vail Resorts is publicly held and we have access to all their filings and documents and finances, they're a pretty easy target, right?
So skiers and snowboarders are paying for hundreds of dollars for this pass. They've sold millions of these passes. That's billions of dollars potentially. And then they don't have the staff. So, I mean, I'm seeing a connection here between maybe people not being paid enough to do those jobs. What are the numbers from you as an expert that's watching this industry? What are those numbers telling you?
Well, Vail last summer raised the minimum wage of all its workers to $15 an hour. It was their largest capital expense for the year. And this is a company that spends a lot of money every year. $150 to $350 million a year on new chairlifts and grooming and restaurants and all the things that you see at the ski area. They raised the pay and it might not have been enough. Aspen Skiing, say, in the Roaring Fork Valley, they did the same thing and quickly they saw the writing on the wall. And before the season even started, they raised their minimum wage to $17 an hour. And so Vail, mid-season, a couple weeks ago, they announced that they were directing, $20 million to end-of-season bonuses for their workers. Now, there's 55,000 workers for Vail Resorts. It's a big company, right? So they're going to spend $20 million on these end-of-season bonuses that basically raise everybody's pay to $17 an hour if they finish. And it could be argued that that still isn't enough.
Right.
You come to these mountain towns and just about everybody, if you're a small restaurant owner, Bree, and you want to, get the right workers, you're going to pay 18, 20, 25 bucks an hour. I live up in Eagle. My daughter's a teenager. She's working at a restaurant for $20 an hour. She thinks it's normal. she thinks that's the way it is. But the demand is just so crazy in these ski towns to get quality workers. I mean, that's the issue, is where can they put workers in this incredible, incredibly tight real estate market where these ski communities, some of them haven't built hotels for 20 years, and that's given rise to short-term rental markets, which has drawn investors who have taken homes out of the long-term market that used to be lived in by locals. So, there's that play in there. There's the fact that it's just so difficult to build and permit density housing in mountain towns, right? Like, we don't necessarily want urban style, apartment complexes in the mountains, but that might be what we need.
So the petition is really addressing the slopes, like you said, in Washington state. Why are people so upset in Washington, but the petition hasn't seemed to catch on here in Colorado?
Yeah, we have not seen the petition here, but we have seen ski instructors file class action lawsuits against the company at Beaver Creek. We've seen ski instructors at Breckenridge file a request with the company to improve pay, improve safety. We're starting to see more of a groundswell maybe from workers. There's been pictures of lift lines all over that we see. Those are wildly popular. But
yes.
It's important to note that you know, this industry, you know, I've been skiing since the 70s, since I was a kid coming up for vacation. And we always waited in lift lines. A lift line on a Saturday morning at the base of a ski area is a time-worn image. It's just what it is. We have not seen that kind of upswell of petition signing, hold Vail Resorts accountable out of Colorado. But that's not to say that the angst is not there.
What do you predict for next year's ski economics? As I mean, we're all crossing our fingers the pandemic subsides.
Sure.
What do you see or project?
So I would expect that resorts will significantly increase their base pay. They will realize that we need to pay 20, 25 bucks an hour. And resorts are going to say season passes need to be a certain price. Vail Resorts changed that model by offering this Epic Pass. They slashed the price of a season pass by almost 50% and started selling passes 10 years ago, unlimited ski passes, the Epic Pass. And that has redefined the industry. Up until this season, we found a pretty good balance with it, you know, say a 5 to 10% annual increase in price in those passes. So in order to modulate that demand, we can't necessarily have, I don't know, record numbers of visitors with combined with, a dwindling workforce. So there must be a balance in there somewhere. And I think we're going to see some adjustment to season pass prices, some adjustment to hourly wages. And hopefully we see some construction and kind of more movement on some high density housing to accommodate, you know, the growing demand for workers that we're going to need to, you know, accommodate these record numbers of crowds. I think we're going to see a growing appreciation for the local community, the local workers, and whether that means more pay, you know, more choices for accommodation, just a better way to amplify their critical importance to our mountain culture.
Jason Blevins, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course, Bree, this was fun.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ellie Stuckrath. Special thanks to Jamie Sutler, Jack Catlin, Dave Ashton, Shannon Young, and to the CityCast Denver crew for their contributions to today's program. Rosano Longo-Better has been operating the board. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then the Unaffordable podcast looks at homeowner associations in Boulder.